And now I'd like to introduce our speaker for tonight, Linda.
Hi, everyone. I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon. My name is Linda. Let me get the nerves out really quick, because I walked in and I said, Tim, you didn't tell me this room was this big. I'm really grateful to be here. Thank you, Tim, for asking me to do this. I haven't done this in a while. I've been a little busy being a wife and a mother for the last few years, and some of the recovery that I did early on prepared me for that job, and I'm so grateful. I was kind of praying and meditating about what God would have me share with you tonight. I was saying that, you know, I want to say stuff that's funny to make you laugh, things that'll touch you to make you cry, and I'll leave here and you'll be so impressed with me that you'll ask me to come back next time. And then I said, okay, God, but what do you want me to do? And he said something about, find out about how many people in the room are single. Will you guys raise your hand if you're single? Awesome. I want to know why I wasn't asked to speak at this meeting when I was single. I heard about the men's stag meeting in La Cunada years ago, but I was always afraid to come. The reason I asked that is because I started the program when I was 25. I'll be 45 in May, so it'll be 20 years in December that I've been in the program. But I've spent most of my program as a single person. And one of the things that I believe that what God brought me to the program when he did, as young as he did, was because to spare me from making a whole lot of mistakes that I watched the alcoholics of my life and the Al-Anons of my life make before I got here. So my story basically is this. I was living on my own, working for First Interstate Bank, and there was this really awesome guy that worked there, and I was in a current relationship, and with somebody, and it had been a long relationship, a long time coming to an end, and engaged, wedding called off, broke up, back together, 7 years. Like, I think I was 16, 17 years old when we started, and I was just afraid to be out of that relationship, and I had been in a relationship for a few years before that, so I looked back at my life, and I thought, well, the last probably 14 years, I hadn't even been single yet, and I was only 24, 25. And it's kind of sad. And then, so I met this guy who looked like he was a lot of fun. And I felt like I was a pretty boring person. And so I started making my moves, if you will. And they were subtle, you know. But I think that the main thing was is that I wasn't really sure that this guy was really someone I wanted. He just had that look. He had that look. You guys know what I'm talking about, the look. And so I said, you know, I really like this guy. And then I found out what his old girlfriend used to look like. And I was like, oh, yeah, not a chance. I mean, she was like tall, blonde, gorgeous. I mean, she was like the kind of girl that you would see in a Sports Illustrated, you know, magazine. And I was like, oh. So I really have to turn it on, you know, to make this work. And that was like the beginning of the end for me. And I became so obsessed with this guy. And eventually, we started dating, and this was right around the time the Rodney King trial happened. I'm from Simi Valley. Well, I was born and raised. I'm a Valley girl, but this was in Simi Valley. And we were, like, batting down the hatches. We couldn't leave Simi Valley for 24 hours or something like that. And, oh, my gosh, what is that? And so that's kind of how the relationship started. I mean, literally, like, 3 days after the last one ended. I mean, there was, like, no time in between. And, you know, it's like I had one ready to go when I was ditching the other guy. And because I didn't want to be alone. That meant I would probably have, now looking back, I can say I didn't want to deal with me. I didn't want to see why I always felt, you know, empty, lonely, angry. And so that relationship, like within 9 months, it spiraled down to nothing. I mean, I was a very sick individual, both spiritually and physically. I'm 5'8". I was like 100 pounds. All I did was smoke and eat iceberg lettuce. I mean, that was like how I existed. It was really, really bad. My hair was falling out. I mean, that's how fast this disease took me down. And, you know, I would look back and I was like, I have not had a successful relationship. I mean, I'm 25. I mean, really, how successful would you be at that point anyway for most people? But I had not had a successful relationship yet. And I felt like I didn't have boyfriends. I had hostages. It was like I met them, I sought them, and I took them, you know, kind of thing. And I think that that was when I realized for the first time that the misery that I had experienced for those years of my life already were not my parents' fault anymore. Because I had, at this point, I had not had a relationship with my parents. They had both drank a lot in my growing up years, and there was always a problem of alcoholism in my home. And I think I acted out through these relationships. And so anyway, I got to Al-Anon. I called a friend of mine who was in AA, and I asked her, you know, what should I do? He's passing out all the time. And he finally said, I'll quit drinking. And then all of a sudden the drugs were around. And I was not a drug person. I mean, pot was big in the 80s, you know, when I was growing up, and then cocaine. But I was such a hyper person. Cocaine scared me, so I didn't want any part of that. And come to find out, he was using like methamphetamines or whatever. That was when that was really getting big in the 90s. And so he quit drinking and started drugging. And then I even got sicker and sicker. And so went to meetings. The very first meeting I went to, I heard this woman sharing about standing in the rafters of her husband, of their garage, like tearing the house apart, looking for the bottles of booze and the drugs and stuff. And I was like, whoa, I can totally relate to her. Because, I mean, he would like disappear for a little while and I'd be in his van ripping it apart. And by this time, I had moved in with him to, you know, fix the relationship because it wasn't good. So if I move in, it'll be better. And so I did that. And so I go to this meeting. I hear this lady and I'm like, I totally like this chick. She's really cool. And so I asked her to be my sponsor. I knew the program, how it worked. I had a friends in AA that I hung out with all the time. And so, you know, I started going to meetings and, you know, I was going to get him sober. And then I realized that really by the second meeting, this was for me. And it was like for the first time I heard someone say, this is not about them, this is about us. And I thought, oh my gosh. And I think that that was the first time I really cried in a really long time. Like I felt in the depths of my being that this is where I needed to be and that there's a lot of work ahead of me. And so that was, you know, kind of my journey, the way it started. And then, you know, rewinding, you know, dealing with that relationship was like the first thing I had to do. You know, when I got the sponsor, I kind of like tiptoed around that poolside. I think it was Frankie that said that or somebody. I was kind of poolside that first 9 months. And then I realized I needed to do this differently. And so the first order of duty was to stay single for 30 days. I don't even know how that even happened. It was purely by God's grace. Because seriously, I mean, I have pictures of me with boyfriends in kindergarten. I mean, I'm not lying. And so it was like this, literally like this, like detox thing that had to go on. I mean, I was really jonesing over this. It was really bad. And, you know, I did not like what I saw. You know, when I looked in the mirror, I was not happy with the not necessarily the exterior so much as what was happening inside me. And so I started working the steps. I got a service. I got really active in a meeting out in the valley. A lot of you are familiar with. It's the Friday night meeting on Dumetz. It was not on Dumetz back then, but I got really active in that meeting, the Catalina conferences, the four-step workshops, that kind of stuff. Really active with a lot of women in the program. And, you know, one of the reasons why I knew about the Men's Stag is I used to think, what a cool place. Because I had issues with men, so I couldn't really go anywhere that felt safe for me when I was off men, you know. And so I went to a lot of sister meetings with a lot of women and stuff like that. And eventually I just got scared of men altogether. And so I spent about 2 years just working the steps, doing, you know, being of service. I started sponsoring some people, some younger women, and I had made a commitment to myself by this point that I just wanted to stay single. And so about 2 years into it, I thought, maybe I'm ready, you know. So my sponsor and I talked about it. I wasn't ready. And so, you know, one more time, just a stupid relationship. And but the difference this time was that I didn't totally sell out. You know, I had some dignity back. I had some grace back in my life. So I had initially made a commitment to remain celibate. And this was not like a religious choice or anything like that. This was a choice that I felt like God put on my heart to make. And it wasn't that I was, you know, up and down the roads, you know, sleeping with every Tom, Dick, and Harry, but it was, I knew that it was not doing well for my soul. And so I had made that commitment surely out of pure control, I think, initially. I don't think it was really the spiritual aspect of it until a couple years into it. And but what it did for me is it let me get whole again in a way that I had not been before. And so I was able to see people more clearly. I was able to see myself clearly. I was able to see myself as what I would want in my future. And I remember hearing a woman share about, you know, when you want to be in a relationship, you know, make that list of someone, that perfect someone for you. You know, and I knew my picker was broke. I mean, there was no question about that. But that list just made a lot of sense to me. So I wrote that list. And then I kind of laughed because I'm like, I'm nothing like this person. This person would never want to be with me, you know? And I don't say that to put myself down. I say that because I was just really immature and very angry and a very unhappy human being. So, you know, it was like, that was the goal, was, okay, this is the kind of person I want to attract. This is the kind of person that I want to become. And it wasn't something I was going to do on my own might. You know, it was definitely the work of the program and my higher power and just truly surrendering all on a daily basis. And, you know, I didn't do it perfectly, never have, never will, but I was always willing to be willing. That was one of the things that I feel has been a gift that God gave me for this program, was to be willing. And I really do believe that he used this program to save my life. In fact, I was chatting with David out there, and he was talking about how it saved his life. And I can definitely attest that I think that things would have gotten very bleak for me very quickly had I continued on the road I was on. So during this time, these couple years, I was able to mend fences with my family. My sister is another person in my family that has a drinking problem. It came over a course of years, and I'm grateful to say that she is sober today for 9 months, and I'll get to that part of it a little bit later. But my parents were the main people that I was affected by. My dad was always a drinker. My mother was kind of a co-alcoholic, if you will. Like, she kind of hung in there with him. Never really drank much until they got married. And my sister was from a previous marriage that my mom had with an alcoholic who was very abusive. She left him in Iowa, came out here, and to bring my sister and to raise her here because we had other relatives, actually here in La Cañada and actually La Crescenta. And so that's how my mom got, you know, initially, you know, in touch with the disease, and her Al-Anonisms, you know, peaked up, not to mention her father back in the day, you know, contractor, worked all day, came home, had dinner, left the wife with the 7 kids at home and went to the bar all night. And so when my dad and her married, my dad didn't come home that first night. She's like, I'm not having this. If you're going to drink, you're going to drink home, or I'm gone. And she'd already left one man like that. And so my dad obliged. And so they proceeded over the years to just get drunk at home together. And which I guess is a good thing because, you know, we were never abandoned, you know, physically. And then I have a younger brother, so my sister and my brother and I. And my brother was the fair-haired boy, the only son, mom's baby. I was daddy's favorite, and because my sister kind of always outcasted herself because her dad was dead and he wasn't around. So, but I have like the epitome of like the middle child syndrome. I mean, I need to sit in the center of rooms. I need to walk through the center of doorways. I mean, it's very strange. And I really have tried to like merge from one side to the other, but. Only time I'm on one side is in the fast lane, because I want to be in the fast lane. So that's the only time I'm really not in the center. And because I do have a lot of the alcoholic personality stuff. I like the center of attention. And this is perfect. No, I'm kidding. So I told, you know, I told my mom and dad that, you know, I wanted our relationship to be better. And my dad came from the, you know, children to be seen, not heard generation. My grandfather was a Mack truck salesman. They lived over here in Eagle Rock, and he grew up very wealthy. My mom grew up very poor, and they were a match made in heaven. And so with, you know, looking back at how my life went, I could see where some of the pitfalls happened, where I started kind of losing ground as a teenager. And it was about 14 years of age. My sister, I didn't realize how much my sister protected me from the drinking in our home until she got married. She's 7 years older than I am, so she got married at 19. That was her escape. And she married the man that she's currently still married to after 30-some years, which is, you know, a huge thing. And so she left, and then that's when things started kind of rolling downhill. So my sister got married. She was everything to me. My sister and I are very, very close. She was really the nurturer. My mom was a very rigid person, very stressed, very much perfect house, you know, full on, you know, June Cleaver, had to be perfect when Dad came home, you know, cast the kids aside. And so that was just the way it looked, and because it needed to look like that. You know, church on Sunday, beat the crap out of you there, beat the crap out of you on the way home. But, you know, everybody looked perfect when we were at church. And so that was when, you know, I think things started to turn. My dad lost his business. His drinking increased. My mother's sister died, who was my favorite aunt. And then, so like the alcoholism, my mom's sister died. My sister moved out. And my mom and dad's drinking had gone pretty much over the top. I was about 14, and that's when some of my real acting out behavior started. So I was able to get back to those places and really heal that. You know, it's like they talk about the four-step: uncover, discover, discard. You know, I was able to uncover a lot of stuff that I just kind of like whitewashed, you know, and just kind of moved on. Oh my gosh, I swear I'm going to knock this thing over. And so the relationship with my parents began to heal. I would call the house. My dad would always give my mom the phone. And I'd say, you know what, Dad, I want to talk to you. And so I kind of forced him to have a relationship with me. And, you know, I never thought that it would be the kind of relationship that we have today. I mean, we have a very good relationship. My parents are still very active in their drinking. We don't allow them in our home to drink hard liquor. They can bring a bottle of wine if they want, but that's it. Like, we have, my husband and I are very, very specific about that because we have small children. When we didn't have children, it's like, do what you want, but now we have small children. So that was probably one of the first big gifts I got from this program was a relationship with my parents. And, you know, I can be pretty honest with them today. You know, I blame them for everything. I was able to make my amends. I've made a living amends with them more than I made like a written amends or a spoken amends, because they're not really terribly safe on some levels. My dad thinks that if you say anything negative about your parent, their parenting, that were that he was a terrible dad, or vice versa. One of the things that caused my dad and I to have a much more healed relationship than I had ever anticipated was he suffered from profound hearing loss. And when about my early 30s, I started discovering that I had some issues. And so in about 2004, I had been diagnosed with some nerve damage, and I had lost about 60% of my hearing in both ears. And so my dad and I were able to bond in that process, as, you know, going through the hearing aid process. I mean, I was a single woman, don't believe me. I was like, what guy's ever going to marry me with these big old honking things hanging off my head? And, you know, that was my first thought. And really what that whole process did was it humbled me, and it made me more able to be in a relationship with my father. And God provided the finances that it took to get myself the proper devices that I needed. And I've had the privilege of helping many other adults walk through that process. And because it's very hard to hear after not hearing for so long and not realizing it. And so that was one of the really cool gifts that I got from something that was seemingly bad. You know, there's a lot of people in AA that talk about the seemingly good and the seemingly bad. It's all necessary for our growth. And I truly believe that. And I tend to be an optimistic at heart anyway, but there was a lot to be grateful for in that situation. Fast forwarding, I was, 30-something, and I saw that movie 28 Days where they said, get a plant if it lasts a year, get a dog if it lasts a year, you might be ready for a relationship. And I say that because in my younger years, I had a really violent temper. Most of my ism came out with rage and anger, lack of patience. And God forgive me, all you animal lovers, but I was like really mean to cats when I was a kid. Really, really mean to cats. And I'm glad they land on their feet. And I know it's bad, it's bad, it's bad. I still don't like them, but I don't hurt them anymore. But I mean, that's really a part of my story. That's how I mean, even like little kids and stuff like that, I was so mean to little kids because I was just, I always felt beat up on. You know, there was so much abuse in the home that rolls downhill. You know, the husband comes home, he yells at the wife yells at the kids, you know, beat the doll, you know, the other one beats the cat, you know, just kind of the way it happened. And so there was a lot of abuse. I imposed a lot of abuse on people because of my anger and my rage. And so to say that, that's part of what God has used to kind of heal me. In this, not that I don't get mad, because I still do. I don't road rage, although we did see some crazy person on the way here that was doing that. I was like, wow, that's kind of scary. because I'm so removed from that behavior now more often than not. But to say all that is, so I had this plant that lived. I bought a condo, and that was the housewarming gift. And like a year or so had passed, and I thought, or actually a couple years, and I was like, wow, you know, maybe I could get a dog. You know, I'd never had a pet. I mean, I had a hamster. I had a lot of hamsters, and we all know hamsters die really easily. And I honestly did not purposely kill any of the hamsters, I swear to you. But, you know, they have the ball, they roll down the hill, you can't catch them, you know? I mean, it was bad. So I hadn't kept an animal alive yet. So I talked to some friends, I talked to my sponsor. I mean, this is how simple I had to keep my life. I had to reason everything out. So I got a dog. I adopted this hideous-looking creature. I mean, my girlfriends over here could tell you, oh, yeah, he's so ugly, he's cute, though. He's a little Chihuahua terrier, and he's got the underbite, and he's big old ears, and he was supposed to be really nice, but he's really not that nice. And but he loved me, and I loved him, and I took really good care of him. And so that went on for a couple years. And again, because I had the abuse issues with the animals, I was really afraid that if he did something wrong, I would be upset. And so there was a lot of fear going into that. But it was one of those baby step things. So I did that. Had a very successful Cody is still alive today. He's doing well. He's kind of old, but, you know, he's doing well. He's like 12 or 13 now. And so he's my amends to all the cats out there. And then it was like the abuse of the relationships, these poor men that, you know, I dated and, you know, expected everything from. And so I got to know men on a very friendly, like, you know, basis. And I tell you, the first experience I had, a safe experience with men, was in the rooms of Al-Anon. In fact, two of them have just recently passed away over the last couple months. Ed Kay, a lot of you know, and then Fred Weiner from the Valley. And, you know, for very early on in the program, I was really trying to not pay attention to the opposite sex, and I had some unfortunate instances with some older men in the program that were inappropriate. And, you know, I knew enough to know that it wasn't my fault, but at the same time, I can't run away from stuff like that. You know, I have to be responsible, step up and work my program in that situation. And it kind of gave me some lessons on how to treat myself and treat others when I'm not treated well. And, you know, it was kind of a really rough situation at the beginning, but, you know, it all worked itself out. I can see that gentleman today, and there's no issues, nothing. But, you know, so I encourage, I know there's a lot of you that are men that come to the STAG meeting here, but, you know, just always keep in mind that we're all so delicate and we're all still sick. And, you know, so I just always try to express that, you know, we're not always aware of our behavior when we get here, you know. And to just love each other like brothers and sisters. And I loved how that one gentleman shared after his birthday about the sister in the program and stuff. And that's really what I think healed me a lot from the inside out in the relationship department with my father. My brother and I have always been okay. And then in my current marriage. that guy. So 12 years later, I decided the dog's alive, the plant's alive. Maybe I should think about this relationship thing. And there were some periodic dating in there, very brief, like, you know, a month, 2-3 months here. I mean, pretty much 3 to 5 dates, you know. If you just keep your eyes open, you know, what is it, turn down the volume and watch the action, you know. And so I had that kind of, just paying attention. And I learned a lot about how I operate, and I didn't operate so well. And so it was really a good opportunity for me to, like, really understand what makes me tick in a relationship and what is not good for me in a relationship, what I do in relationships that's not good for somebody else. So I was really appreciative of that process. You know, more is always revealed. And then I went on eHarmony. I wanted someone with a spiritual foundation because that was so important to me in the program. And it's funny because, you know, jumping back a few years, the ladies that all were single when I first started the program, they used to go to AA meetings to meet guys. I was like, really? Why? Why would you do that? And I mean, I get it. They're totally a blast, but only for a while, you know? And then the truth comes. But I didn't like myself with those type of people because I became someone that I didn't like. And I love them. I love all the alcoholics in my life. And I'm so glad I know how to love them today. But I have to really be actively working my program to be around people that are in their disease. And so I met my husband on eHarmony, and we emailed back and forth for quite a while. I didn't want to talk on the phone. I wanted to, and he was a writer, so he got me there. He got me in the writing department right away. And so I just kind of just took it real slow, and so we met in person. We actually got matched on April Fool's Day, which is really appropriate because we're both kind of foolish. And I saw that he had 3 kids, and I was like, what? I don't even know. Now, here is this angry girl thinking about angry girl who used to beat up on little kids, not wanting to be anybody's mom, and so I'm like, 3 kids. I don't know if I can do this whole family thing. So I kind of was just going to, kick him to the curb, and I hadn't been married yet. I just thought, I don't know. And so I thought, okay, talk to a friend of mine. I reasoned it out, and she's like, maybe his kids are older. He was married for 19 years. Maybe he had kids really young. I said, that's a good point. So that was my next question in our correspondence, how old are your kids? So his oldest was 17, and his twins were 16. Or actually 18 and 16. The twins were 16. So I'm like, 3 boys, wow. And so I kind of knew that that part of his life was coming to an end. They were getting in those older years, So I thought, well, do you have custody? you got to know these things, right? Because, by this time I'm, 35? I got no time to waste here, people. And So we continued to correspond. We finally met in person. We had a date planned, and I thought, well, I'll wait until I'm not going to think about it. I'm just going to go. I'm just going to pray. I'm just going to go about my day. Because, that was the thing. I started obsessing. The second I met someone, that's all I thought about. Am I going to see them here? Am I going to see them there? And that's just the way my head would go. And I was like, God, you have got to remove this obsession. And he really did. He really had substituted so much other stuff in my life, so many other things that filled my life up that I wasn't so empty trying to get someone to fill me and fix me. And so so we met, and I was kind of a little unsure at first. And we had, spiritually, we were kind of on the same page, and I'm pretty bold. Like I said, at this point, I'm just like, I don't really have a lot of time to waste. And I was kind of contemplating, would I ever want children? And I said to him, do you have any desire to have any more children? And he said, it's interesting because one of the things I was really thoughtful about before I went on this dating site was, would I ever consider having children? Because at this point, he's only 41 years old. He's not that old of a guy. Now he's going to be 50. But he said yes. He said he loved children. Turns out he was like a children's pastor for like 20 years. I'm like, oh, wow. So you really know how to raise kids. So I thought, that's pretty good. Since I'm probably going to suck at it. And but because there was that stirring had been, and it's not the biological clock thing. It was just the reality of where I was in my life. I was finally settled down. I wasn't jumping out of planes anymore and, doing all the crazy stuff I was doing back then. And so we, by the second date, I pretty much knew this guy was the guy I was going to marry. I didn't want to marry him yet, but I knew he was the guy I was going to marry. And so we had a pretty short courtship, if you will. And, we got married about a year later. And, one of the things that I encourage those of you who are still out there looking for that person in your life, one of the things that really helped me was I watched how he treated other people. Someone told me that in the program. They said, watch how he treats waitresses and waiters, or servers, sorry. Watch how he treats, his mother, his siblings, and, obviously his kids, and how he treats other people. And that was one of the things that was most attractive to me about him, is he was very gentle and kind to everybody. No matter how rude they might have been, he was like, oh, I'm sorry, excuse me. He just was very confident and had a very strong relationship with God, and I think that's a lot of where it came from. And so we ended up getting married. I kind of realized, I heard this poem about apple trees and how the best fruit is at the top of the tree. And a lot of times when we're in our dating life, we go for the stuff that fell on the ground, and we don't, the rotten fruit, you know, the low-hanging fruit, if you will. And it sounds funny now, but it was very spiritual to me at the time. It was speaking to me, and I kind of felt like I kind of climbed up that tree a little bit. I was finally at that place where I had a full plate to bring to the table. I didn't feel like I was looking for someone to complete me or fix me or fill me. I felt like I was a complete person in and of my own right. And so that's like at the moment I read that and I'm like, I'm ready. I'm really ready to get married. I didn't tell him this, but I just kind of had to sit with it. Well, like the next week he proposed. It was like, it was like, good thing for you I read that poem a week ago, or we would not be celebrating right now. I mean, that's how close it was to that journey, you know, for me with him. And he grew up in an alcoholic home. His father died of the disease. He was an Alateen, very active in Alateen for a lot of years. And he doesn't choose to work the recovery program any longer. But he's probably like the most incredibly step-working normie I've ever met. Like, he really understands the principles of this program. And I dated a lot of people, you know, over that course of time where they wanted, like, especially, like, gentlemen who were very involved in their church are like, are you still going to do that Al-Anon stuff? Like, you're not going to do that anymore once you get married, right? I'm like, well, yeah, you know. You wouldn't like me if I didn't, I promise you. That I can guarantee you. So that's, you know, so we got married in 05 and we decided to have kids. I you know, it was one of those things that we just really committed to prayer. And I have a little boy that just turned 6 in January and a little girl who'll be 4 next month, Jared and Olivia. And, you know, when I was probably about 30 some years old, I prayed about whether or not should ever have children. And the name Jared came to me and I thought, oh, maybe I'll marry a guy named Jared. But little did I know that I would just have a son named Jared. And, so that's kind of how I got to where I was. And then where the disease really took off again, see, my bottom was not bad from a financial or anything like that, but it was emotionally very, very, very bad, very low. And my sister's drinking. My sister had drug addiction issues in the 80s when, you know, cocaine was really huge. And she had an addiction to that, got off of that. I actually really didn't even know she was addicted to it. I just thought she was a really big slob who didn't ever do anything around her house but sleep, because she would be up all night. And she had 3 kids. At the time, she had 2 kids. And so she was really kind of falling apart, and we didn't really understand what was going on with her. And then eventually she got off the drugs, and we found out what was going on with her. And then the depression and stuff kept coming. And so I think she kind of suffers from some form of mental illness, and like a bipolar or something like that. And she is like the coolest, funniest, most beautiful woman. And she has no idea, you know, she has no idea about that stuff about her. And so, as I've been in program, our relationship has grown and grown and grown. And, I've only shared this from the podium once before. And, almost 4 years ago, my sister's daughter was, arrested for, the murder of her daughter, my great niece. And a lot of you probably heard about it. It was in Palmdale, Lancaster area. And I have never needed this program more than I needed it then. And the reason I say that is because at this point, I am 9 months pregnant with my, 8 months and 2 weeks pregnant with my daughter. And I had just fallen in a ditch. On like St. Patrick's Day, I fell in a ditch chasing my son. And I had just been in the hospital. I broke my toe, lacerations on my hips, my hands. I was a train wreck. But baby was fine. And so I got a call at 11:30 that night from my brother-in-law saying that Stacy and Emma were missing. And that they had been abducted. And this is out of a cold. I mean, I was like asleep. And my immediate instincts were to get in the car and drive to Lancaster at midnight. I had a broken foot. You know, it was just like that Al-Anon, like, I'm going to get there. I'm going to fix this. My sister's falling apart. She needs me. And my husband, with the wisdom that he has, he just said, do you really think that's a good idea? Like, he knows that you can't stop me from anything. He knows that about me. It's like, the worst thing he can do is say, don't do that, because I'm going to do it. And And so, you know, I thought about it. I'm like, you know what? You're right. I had some heart issues through the pregnancy as well. So we were like, you know what? You're right. But I knew I wasn't going back to sleep. So I just prayed and prayed. And by 5 a.m., it was on the news. And we then, in a few hours, my husband had an appointment. So a friend came to stay with me. And my doctor had given me something to sleep. And so I went to sleep. And when I woke up, the first thing I asked was, have they found Emma yet? And my girlfriend had said, yeah, Joe's on his way home. And I knew that she was dead. And at this point, we had still thought she would have been abducted. And but she was with her mom, my niece. My sister's daughter was arrested 6 weeks later. And 23 years old, a single mom. My sister and her husband invited her into their home so they could help her because the father had a drug and alcohol problem. And my niece was a lot like I was. And I knew that I never wanted to be pregnant because I was too terrified to be a parent in those days. She had a lot less common sense about that kind of stuff. And when they said that they thought that she would be the one that had done it, I was like, it's like I can think back as that 23-year-old girl back then and going through what she was going through. My sister's drinking was out of control. Maybe she did. I don't know. I wasn't there. But she was the last person to see Emma alive. And my sister just, I don't need to tell you guys how that went for her. Her drinking got to be just out of control. And she was with me when my son was born. And now I have this little girl that I'm about to give birth to. And a sister who just lost her granddaughter, who was everything to her. She was taking care of her by day and working nights to help my niece. And, you know, I think that, honestly, this is where my husband, the man that he is really what came into play. I could not really do the right thing to take care of myself. It was just such an emotional, to see my sister in that kind of shape was probably one of the hardest things I've ever had to do in my life. And try to be joyful about this little person that I'm carrying inside of me when they just lost the most precious thing in their life. And I did have the tools. I had the common sense. Is that the timer? Awesome. Thank you. I was like thinking that it's a raid. Woo! So I asked my husband just to, please give me some space with my family to try to, work through some of this stuff. And it took 3 years. The trial took a year, almost 2 years for the trial to come. And my niece was convicted of all the charges. And she's going to be in prison probably for the rest of her life. And it was like we buried Emma and we buried Stacy in a way, because, she's never going to have the life that you would have wanted for a beautiful young lady. And so her drinking got really, really out of hand. And she wanted to be in the delivery room when I had my daughter. This is 6 weeks after. And I had already had some pretty rough emotional stuff going on prior because I was quitting my job and I was going to be a stay-at-home mom. So I always had my own stuff I was trying to work through, plus all this other outside issues that I was not prepared for. And the one thing I can say that I know, it's like I knew how big God was, so there were a lot of the big stuff I was able to let go. And it was just the small decision-making. And I was really grateful for a husband that we shared that same spiritual bond because we were able to be prayerful together and come to good decisions in that process. I did have my sister there. I wanted to go drug-free. It was just one of the things that I wanted. And thankfully, it was a very quick. The first one was 32 hours. The second was 5. So an intense 5 hours. But she was there. My brother-in-law was there. He's been in our life since they were 15. I don't know my life without him. And he couldn't see me or be with my daughter for almost a year and a half. And that was really hard because we were very close. But I understood where he was coming from. I would let him the dignity to be where he needed to be. And but he would call a lot about my sister's drinking. And, I would just have to say, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that's happening. I don't know what to tell you. There are lots of meetings up there. I can get you in touch with some people. I just knew intuitively how to handle that situation that would have baffled me prior to being in this program. My sister got sober. She attempted suicide. about 2 years ago, it'll be 2 years actually in April, and got sober for a very brief period of time and then went back to drinking and took herself to rehab this last Memorial Day weekend. And she won't do a program, and you know, she struggles with not drinking pretty much every day. And, you know, I asked her, she started going to therapy again at least, so I was grateful for that. And so I said to her, she asked me about, so I'm really excited about having 1 year of sobriety. She goes, I don't know why. I go, yeah. And I go, the bummer is no one's really going to have any fun to celebrate with you because no one gets it. I get it, but no one else gets it. I said, you know, you're really losing out on what a glorious program you could be a part of and celebrating this milestone in your life. I said, I won't say another word about it. I just want you to know that. Because she always says to me when people ask her about me, she says, my little sister, she's someone I want to be when I grow up. And that is such a God thing. I mean, I could not be that person for her ever, ever, ever. Nor do I want to try to be. But because I think so well of her that was like one of the biggest compliments I think anybody could have ever paid me. But she doesn't see that the only reason it is what it is because of my higher power in this program. So I am a very, very grateful member. And I just really, truly appreciate you, Tim, asking me to share. And it's always good to, you know, give back. You know, we can't outgive God and we can't outgive this program by any stretch of the imagination. So for that, I am truly grateful. And newcomers, please keep coming back because it does work, but it does take work. And happy birthday to all you birthday people. And thank you for letting me share.